We've learned how to use various kinds of tactics rather than just direct suppression and full suppression on all fires, but we've learned how to manage various fires in different ways with different kinds of tactics to accomplish protection and resource objectives. And I think, the biggest change is just that the program has expanded, the capability has expanded. Our policy has changed a number of times, been reviewed, revised, and probably more times in the last 30 years than in the previous 30 years. And the policy now is more flexible and versatile than it's ever been. It allows us to do a lot of different things. And all the parties involved in fire management use that policy to varying degrees. I mean, some missions prohibit some people from doing various aspects of it. Federal agencies can do all aspects of it and so on.
We've learned, haven't we, that fire is not always the enemy. It can be our friend.
Absolutely. We've learned a lot about that, and we've learned that fire is not a menace or the enemy or that we need to exclude it from the forest. We've learned that excluding it, full exclusion of fire, is not the answer. It does not get us to where we need to get to with managing these lands and natural resources.
But we're still debating, aren't we, when and how to fight fire. That's an ongoing discussion.
Well, in terms of when to fight fires, it comes back to how we categorize the land and how we want to manage the land. In certain areas, we do want to exclude fire, where fire is a real definite and direct threat to life and property, maybe in the wildland-urban interface or around high-valued resources, where we want to fight those fires and be very good at attacking those fires and suppressing those fires. In other areas, we learned that we need to not exclude fire. We need to have fire present. So we need to not attack those fires to suppress them, but we need to manage those fires and influence how they burn, where they burn, when they burn, and get the beneficial effects from that.
But I guess my question is, it's not always so clear-cut, is it, that life and property are threatened or that fire would be better left to burn through an area even though there might be a resource lost?
Well, that's a good point. It's not easy. And it's not always, what's threatened immediately now may not be the same if the fire moves over several weeks. It may approach other areas or other values and become more of a threat to them later. Or as the fire season or the summer wears on, weather conditions, environmental conditions may change. The potential for the fire to behave in certain ways may increase, and the fire can move a lot further distances and become a threat to other areas. But when we make a decision to manage a fire, we take that into account. We do a long-term risk assessment. We look at the values in certain areas, certain distances away. We look at what the potential is for the fire to spread under certain conditions into those areas. And we design a set of management actions to deal with that, and we try to be proactive because we're dealing with an uncontrolled fire when we're not putting it out. We're dealing with an uncontrolled fire that we want to allow it to burn as a natural process to accomplish the resource benefits that the fire does as a natural process.
But uncontrolled doesn't mean necessarily not managed.
Oh, no. By all means, it does not mean not managed. We are taking active management on that. We may not be taking active suppression actions, but we are taking active management. And there's a variety of things that go on there. Mm-hmm. And when we design the long-term plan on how to deal with this, we look at situations and we call them management action points. That when the fire reaches a certain time in space, or when a certain time period is reached, or when the weather may do something, then that's a point where we initiate some kind of management action, and we identify what that action might be. So we don't just, there's no reality that we just let the fires burn and ignore them. They are actively managed the entire time, and actions are taken throughout this to deal with that.
You mentioned the enormous change and improvements in technology and how we use technology in terms of fire management. I mean, that's just been revolutionary in the last few years and ever more so. But it's also a challenge, isn't it, when we're in remote areas, which is where fire often burns, and the technology is not accessible in some cases.
A lot of the electronic technology that we need to access via internet or our cell phones or things like that may not be accessible in remote areas. But we do have a lot of tools that are they're usable on handheld devices, whether they're tablets, smartphones, or portable or laptop computers, that if we can have generators or battery power, we can access those kind of tools. It may not be the full range of tools available to us, but there are always are a subset available.
I think the contrast that sticks out most in my mind is this past summer in the Yarnell Hill tragedy. I mean, here we have satellites, we have smartphones, we have all these things, and then we have a hotshot crew out there that is out of radio contact, that is out of communication with who they need to be in communication with.
The Yarnell Hill fire led us to a tragedy that's fairly unique in our history in that we lost an entire crew.
In 19 of 20,
but 19 people who were in one contiguous area working together. And so there were no survivors or eyewitnesses to what happened and what they did. So we will never have the answers to all the questions that and all the decisions and all the information they had available to them. You know, we can only assume, it's readily apparent from what they did and how they acted, that the information they had available to them, they thought enabled them to take safe actions and put them in a safe position until such time as that information was so sparse about the changing conditions they didn't realize what was happening. Now, when we say we have all the technology, satellites, cell phone coverage, radio communications, and they were out of communication, that's not really true. They were on top of a mountain and they had coverage. They had radio coverage. They were in communication. They were not actively engaged on the radio. So they had cell phones. And they had cell coverage. They had radios that were working. I mean, we always have problems with radios, and there were frequency problems.
And cell phones.
There were frequency problems with the radios, but they had communicated on the radios up to the point that they entered into their passage down to the deployment site.
But one of the takeaways, isn't it, from that tragedy is that we can't assume that because we have all these tools that they're going to bail us out always, that we still have that human factor that is so crucial.
That's a very, very good point. The human factors, the human involvement, the human dimensions of fire management are very, very important. And that continues to grow in our awareness of that and continues to grow in training. We have leadership training. We have human factor training. We have, you know, combined with safety training and our general training that all accommodates that and is consistent with that.
It seems like another takeaway from our increasingly dire, I would say, firefighting summers, Mr. Zimmerman, is that there is an increasing individual responsibility for how those of us who live with fire are going to approach it, that it's no longer the Forest Service or BLM is going to swoop in and save the day.
Well, I think it should be apparent that can't always happen, and it's not happening in many cases. And you know, the wildland-urban interface, those of us who want to live outside the urban area, outside the developed area, in conjunction with the wildland vegetation, we need to be aware that we're moving into a situation where there's a wildland fuel and vegetation and fire dynamic, and it's always gone on there. We're introducing a human element into that and a structural element into that, but there's still going to be the fire dynamic there. And there is a responsibility by those individuals to respond, to deal with that, to understand that first, and then to deal with that in whatever ways they can. And you can't expect that you cannot expect to move into a wildland area, and that area will stay static as it is today into the future. I mean, things will always change. Fire will visit those areas sooner or later in some form or another, unless mitigation actions are taken to try and mitigate that. Redirect the fire or just influence what kind of fire will come there. In the absence of those kind of actions, when fire comes, it may be something that we don't expect or we don't want to have in there. And we may not be able to deal with that from the federal agencies or the state agencies in terms of protection and suppression.
There's no doubt the next few years are going to be so challenging, in the next few decades, in terms of fire management. Are we up to the task, Mr. Zimmerman? Do you feel like we're going to meet that challenge in the way that we can and should? We don't have much choice, I guess.
I think you've asked three questions there. I think you've asked, are we up to the challenge, and are we going to meet it as we can and should? And I think those are three different things. And are we up to the challenge? Yes, I definitely think we are. I mean, that's what we do. And why we do this? Because we're caring for the land, we're caring for the natural resources, and we're serving people, and we're caring about the infrastructure, the people, the communities. There's a large effort going on right now called the Cohesive Strategy, National Cohesive Strategy, in which it's a collaborative effort between the federal wildland agencies, the federal land management agencies, state agencies, counties, cities, private individuals, to develop a wildland fire cohesive strategy, and it's addressing some of those very items that we need to understand that fire has a presence and what the value of restore fire to natural landscapes. We need to understand that the suppression is a viable form and a necessary form to enhance protection capabilities. And we need to work with communities to enable them to understand the role of fire and to make them better prepared to deal with fire into the future. And those kind of things are very important. Now, in regard to the other two aspects of that, will we do what we can or will we do what we should? It's like, you know, that remains to be seen. We're going to have the capabilities to do that. We're going to have a policy that gives us a lot of flexibility and versatility in how we deal with things. We're going to have a cohesive strategy that addresses all the important aspects of that and identifies personal involvement, community involvement, federal involvement, and so on, and collaboration. And it's going to identify a range of tactics that will be available to us. Now, if we will implement those range of tactics, we will accomplish a number of things. If we will treat fuels and treat vegetation to attempt to mitigate some of the future scenarios that could occur before they occur, we'll be ahead of that. If we don't do those kind of things, if we are more passively engaged in land management, we're going to end up chasing these fires as they occur. We're going to be following the fires into the wildland-urban interface, trying to stop them. We're going to be following the fires across the wildlands. And we may, in the coming decades, with the changing fire environment, we may see intensities of fires that we don't want to see in various areas. And if we don't take active management and active steps to try and lessen those intensities in the future by dealing with the fuels or dealing with the developments or the fuels around developments, then we're going to see those high intensities. But we have ways we can take steps to deal with that. And I think, you know, the important thing is that's what we should do, and what we will do, what we can do, remains to be seen, but we need to be very actively involved in that and take active management steps.
We have been speaking with Tom Zimmerman, who for over three decades has been personally involved with fire management policy and technology. It's always an interesting topic and a challenging one for those of us who live in the West, and I appreciate you taking time to speak with us about your expertise.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the ability to speak with you.